Hello, this is Bronson Fry with the Alaska Associated General Contractors Legacy Podcast. I'm here today with Gary Klebs with Klebs Mechanical. Thank you, Gary, for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.
So just wanted to jump right in here and learn a little about your background, your experience in the trades in Alaska. What originally got you into the mechanical trades?
Well, that's a good question, Bronson. I tell you, I'm originally from Wisconsin, and I graduated from high school in 1970. And it actually was during high school, my high school years, that I was able to get some training in our in the high school shop classes for metalworking and woodworking and that type of thing. So I got kind of exposed to things that way, and a little bit of the trades. And then I also, during high school, my high school years, I worked in construction in between the summer times, working in concrete. We did mostly flat work, so a lot of driveways and sidewalks and things like that. So I was around it at that time too, and really enjoyed it. You know, it was hard work, very hard work, because it's all done manually. We didn't have much for equipment back then, but after you got done with the day's worth of work, you felt good about it. And so after I graduated from high school, I got an opportunity to get into a sheet metal apprenticeship program that was from a rather large contractor who was from a small town close to where I was from. And we did a lot of large work around the states. There was in his sheet metal shop, if you're familiar at all with sheet metal shops, a lot of shops have, they're small, usually 1, 2, 5 guys in them. This particular shop had like 25 guys in it. Just year round, we did a lot of large hospitals, things like that. Did a lot of industrial work, very interesting work, really enjoyed it. I was in the shop mostly fabricating, but it was a 5-year apprenticeship program, and I had to travel. It was 2.5 years of day school, actually. I went 1 day a week to school and 5 years of night school, and I had to travel from my hometown down to Milwaukee, which was about 160-mile round trip, so it was like working all day, and then at night you go down there. It was a good commitment, but it was certainly worthwhile, which is one of the reasons why I'm a really true believer in the apprenticeship programs and what they have to offer. I never did anything as far as additional education over and above the apprenticeship program. Never went to any other community college or anything like that, but it allowed me to make a good living with it and become where I am today.
Outstanding. Well, you're talking to a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
I grew up working with my family, and also the extent of my post-secondary education is my apprenticeship program that I went through. So that's really cool to hear. Now, you're from Wisconsin, is that right?
Yes, uh-huh.
So that's where you got into the sheet metal stuff and started working that. You said you graduated in 1970. So you're working around that area back then and got some experience with the sheet metal side of the trade. What ended up bringing you to Alaska then, and when did that happen?
Well, like I said, the guy, the contractor I worked for was from a small town, he was going to go out of business, and so for the rest of us around that area to get into any kind of steady work, we had to travel a lot, which would have taken us to Milwaukee or Madison or some larger city, because that's where the construction's at. I had a wife and 2.5 kids, I guess, one on the way. And so I thought, you know, if I'm going to have to move my family someplace, I really want to move them someplace where I really want to be. So I ended up, I called up to the local telephone company up in Alaska, up in Anchorage, because I was really always wanting to get up to Alaska here. And I had them send me down this phone book. And out of that, then I copied down, I think there were 6 contractors, so I thought, you know, off of whim, that might suit my talents, I guess you might say. And I sent them resumes at the time, and I got 5 replies out of those 6, and I got one offer to fly me up there and interview me, which was kind of a cool thing because I'd never been on a plane before, so that was a really good thing, and that was a lot of fun. And anyway, I came up here working for him, started as his shop foreman. And that was in 81, late 81. And the theme was, at that time, was Alaska was just coming out of its recession from the pipeline days that ended in about 78 or 79. That was just a coming out. There was a lot of work that was coming up. People all know it. They were all gearing up for it. And I got in on just the start of that. So we moved up here and went to work. And 83 was the biggest year, as far as I know, that Anchorage ever had. There was 9,000 building permits given out in 83. And I think now it averages probably about 1,500, something like that. So there's mm-hmm. There's just a lot of activity going back then. And, of course, I went along and was this contractor's, from being a shop foreman to his general manager. And then the whole economy just took a real nosedive about in 85, I guess, 86. Mm-hmm. Contractor I worked for had to do some cutbacks. I was part of his cutback, basically. He had to do something, and so he encouraged me to start my own business. So I consider it January 1st, 1986 as my start date.
Wow.
For business. And I worked everything myself. I did all my own estimating and installed the jobs, just kind of chief cook and bottle washer. My mm-hmm. wife at the time did, she primarily took care of the books and the payables and different things, and which is a big help. And it went on that way for a couple of years, but what happened really was either feast or famine doing that when you work by yourself, because in construction, as you all know, you bid work and if you're by yourself, you go out and you do that work, and during that time you can make good money. But what happens is that you lose that continuity with that bidding, and you get done with that project, and now you almost got to start over
right.
with that bidding again, and that's a delay. So it was either, I said, feast or famine, either mm-hmm. made money and then you didn't. And so I hired my first worker in about 88, I guess it was, and now I could concentrate a little more on bidding and supervise a crew. And as time went on, a couple more, and then in 89 it was the Exxon Oil Valdez spill happened, which was a tragedy, but from our economy side, that pulled us out of that recession. There was a lot of money that was being pumped into our economy, mm-hmm. and we grew accordingly, as with the state and Anchorage in particular. In 91, I started, or I should say 92, I guess it was, I actually branched out from being a commercial sheet metal installer, contractor, to we went into the residential changeout and service field. We became a Lennox dealer, mm-hmm. and primarily nothing new construction. We primarily did if you needed a boiler changed out or your furnace changed out or higher efficiency or whatever, mm-hmm. that's what we would do. 96, we started doing our own plumbing work, in-house plumbing work. Before that, we subbed it all out, and that brought us into a full mechanical contractor at that time.
Outstanding. So you sounds like you came to up to Alaska at a pretty good time. Things were going on, but doesn't sound like it lasted too long until we hit a bit of a slow time here back there in the late 80s. How was it getting a business off the ground and running in that kind of an economy?
Well, it was actually people at the time, and that's a good question, because people at the time kind of looked at me kind of strange and said, you're crazy starting a business in this kind of economy.
Right.
And, it threw a little self-doubt in me myself, but what happened actually was there was a couple things that really was going for me. First of all, from working for a contractor previous to that and doing all his estimating and purchasing and that type of thing, I knew all the suppliers and knew all the general contractors, had great relationships with them. So that was already in place.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of it is that, Alaska was in the early 80s, everybody was expanding. All the mechanical contractors were expanding. Everybody was buying this and buying that. And, my competition then, what it did was kind of, they all had overblown overheads, if you would.
Right.
And I could start out, I worked out of my house, I bought myself a pickup truck. It was the American dream, basically.
Right.
And, you know, I could be really lean and mean that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it enabled me, of course, I just had that, I had a small capacity, so it didn't take much to fill me up, but that enabled me to be really competitive on most of the work that I bid and successful at it.
That's good. I like that you mentioned your personal relationships that helped you start your company. I imagine that's true just about anywhere, but I think particularly true in a smaller place like Alaska. Those type of things can go a long ways. It's oftentimes more who you know than what you know, and just goes to show that being a decent person,
yeah,
generally speaking, with everyone you cross paths with, is probably do yourself a favor.
Yeah, and you know, from my experience in talking to different people, and you know, even moving up from Wisconsin at the time, I got into a little bit of that back there. We are a little bit of an island up here, and we still have our morals up here in Alaska, and we still do things in a respectful way up here, and that doesn't always happen in other places. You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes action going on that, and you could be used for a price check. You could be, you know, you
right.
could be you bid a job if you get a job and you're the lowest responsible bidder, you expect to get it, but that doesn't always happen in Lower 48.
Now, you grew up working with your family, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember you touched on that earlier. So I imagine that you learned a lot of those ethics from your father. Is that who you spent most of your time working with?
Yeah, my father, my grandfather. You know, my dad was a truck driver, so he was a Teamster, and I wasn't really allowed to go along with him and his truck. I would have liked to, but
right.
I never got there anyway. And my grandfather worked in it's called the Monarch Range Company. Back in the day, they built gas stoves or kitchen stoves and different things like that. And it was a pretty well known name. A lot of, maybe if some of you old timers listening out there might remember that name anyway, because it was all around. But anyway, it's that work ethic, that type of thing. The Midwest work ethic, I mm-hmm. guess I would say that I brought. Not that other places don't have a work ethic, but I think that you know, we worked hard back then. We had large gardens and you know, tried to grow as much as we could and mm-hmm. subsist that way. And
yeah.
But it was a good upbringing. Enjoyed
yeah,
it.
Those ethics and values can and have clearly aided you throughout your career.
Yeah.
And
the only thing we did back then that maybe is a little different is we did go out and steal some sweet corn some nights anyway. When it was we'd go out and get a couple dozen ears or so, or a gunny sack full, and when it was ripe, you know, in August, the time of year, then again, what I'd do is that I'd take it, put a dozen on each one of my relatives' front porch that night. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, they heard me rattling around there with a dozen ears of sweet corn. But canning factories didn't, you know, I always thought they could just
spare a few. I think your secret's safe here.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, that's cool. I have spent a fair amount of time talking to young folks in high schools and whatnot about the construction trades, and you know, oftentimes I get asked, in fact, probably the question I get asked the most is, well, is it hard? And I never know how to answer that, you know. Well, I mean, it's work. I don't know how to quantify, you know, how many calories you're going to burn or whatever. It's nice to see that there are certain things that are universal,
mm-hmm.
and from time or place or wherever, and one of them is a work ethic, and that a lot of times comes from family, if you have that sort of environment growing up. And sounds like it had a big impact on your trajectory, get you to be able to come up here and then find success in a down economy, which is pretty
mm-hmm.
impressive, really. So speaking of finding success in a down economy, it seems as though our state may be mirroring a similar path to what took place in the late 80s. Lots of things different, of course, but how are you feeling about the work outlook currently for our state? How is Klebs Mechanical doing currently, and what do you foresee when you kind of look around nowadays?
Well, You know, first of all, I just like to touch on our economy now a little bit. Is nowhere near what, as far as I'm concerned, and having going through that 80s recession, it's nowhere near as bad as that was at that time. I mean, we had we had banks closing up and everything else back then, and I don't see none of that happening. You know, I do see a change that is similar. For instance, restaurants. I see less people going out and to dinners and lunches and different things. They're not as crowded as what they used to be. I see that happening. So that's always a little bit of an indicator. But really, that's about the only thing in our business. It seems like in the residential end, people, you know, they're repairing more and they're holding off more on these repairs than what they were anyway. And I think that's just a sign that, you know, the spendable money and also the confidence that we have in our I'd say government right now, I think isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's holding some investors back to say, well, you know, they need to get themselves straightened up there first. So I think you know, from that standpoint, I think that, you know, things haven't changed too much, and I don't see where that's going to change too much in the near future. Mm-hmm. Price of oil, of course, we're so dependent on it. We're a resource state. Price of oil is still being controlled by you know, overseas yet, and it's a global economy. Mm-hmm. That might not change either. I think Alaska has to find ways to live within its means, and I think that's the biggest thing. And once that happens, we'll be able to move forward. I do see a lot of, you know, like up in Fairbanks and Clear, those areas, there's just a lot of military work coming up there, which, you know, is workers. You know, it's all opportunities. It's unfortunately, it's for some, it's going to be traveling a little bit, but...
Sure.
You know,
Well, as you learned early on, and many folks have, oftentimes when you work in construction, especially in a place like Alaska, where it's particularly seasonal, oftentimes travel comes with the territory if you're intent on making this a career or, you know, whatever, feeding the family.
Yeah.
That may be necessary. Do you see a big shift in manpower or a migration of manpower out of Alaska or out of Anchorage in the last few years with the little downturn that we've had?
Well, I think I think there's going to have to be a little bit of that. I think there's going to be some contractors and manpower along with it that's going to mm-hmm. have to go up and help satisfy some of this work that's coming out. Big hospital out in Bethel is going on now, that all takes that manpower. Now the good thing about it is that also lightens up, because there's only so much work down here in Anchorage, for instance, primarily I'm talking about. So, so with that happening, it eases up on us down here in Anchorage a little bit. So, it is Alaska's economy, and I think that you know, we're all in this thing together. So, we just have to maybe travel a little bit and live within our means in order to survive this. And, you know, Alaska always has been an up and down state that way. I mean, we never seem to stay even. We're either going up or we're going down. And that's my experience after 37 years up here or something like that. And, you know, I'm an optimist, but I really believe we basically have bottomed out here, and I think we're going to start gradually getting better and better here as the months pass. I think 2017, in my opinion anyway, just a little bit I know about it, it has been our bottoming out year. Of course, like I said, I'm very optimistic. So,
well, I share that curse of being eternally optimistic. You know, one of the things I think about is, like you said, eventually it's going to bounce back. You know, eventually Alaska's economy is going to swing back the other way. And construction is typically an industry that is first in a recession and oftentimes the first out. It's kind of a good barometer of how a local economy is doing. And I sometimes wonder, you know, if things turn around for us, or when things turn around for us in our state, are we going to be faced with a shortage of qualified manpower because so many workers have been forced to move either out of state or other parts, like you said, up north? You know, Fairbanks interior's got a lot of military work, which is good. Thank goodness for us. It'll keep us construction guys afloat, you know, these next few years here in Alaska. But I've talked to a few folks in the industry or in different industries, specifically within construction, and that concern sort of is like bubbling underneath the surface a little bit with a lot of folks that I've talked to. Like, what kind of a position do you think we're going to be in once things do bounce back? And do you think we'll be looking at a need for qualified workers in Alaska, you know, in the next few years when things turn around?
Well, it's my opinion anyway that there's still a need for there's been a need for qualified, skilled Alaska tradespeople for a long time, and I'm going to get into this a little bit, but and I'm going to get on my stump here a little bit. But part of what happened is that, like I told you, when I was in high school, I got exposed to the trades through the courses I took, woodshop, metalworking, welding, that type of thing.
Right.
Well, they took them all out of these. They were there for a while. We didn't have any of those. The high schools went and used that space for some other classes.
It was typing class. I was there. Was my generation.
There you go. Yeah, typing. And, you're right. You know, which is needed because of all the technology now. But you know, a lot of these young people never had a chance to be exposed to it, so they don't know what it's all about. So that's been going on for you know, 20, 25 years or so where that's been out. And I think they're starting to see that that's an important part of education, and they're trying to bring it back again. It's going to take a little bit. I mean, it's not there yet, but it all started happening back then. Where and even, you know, my generation of parents said, well, in order for our kids to be successful, they had to go to college, and that's not the case at all. You know, there's some I've always been a really believer in the apprenticeship training and the trades, and right out of high school, young people can get in a four-year apprenticeship program and put their best foot forward, and in 4 years' time they're making $80,000-$90,000 a year.
Right.
You know, instead of having that much and more of that in debt going out to college and then coming out of college and discovering that if they even graduate from college and discover that, well, I really don't want to go to school anymore. I want to work with my hands, and so. Right. You know, so that's a right now. I still believe that we have a shortage of workers. We have a shortage of skilled trade people, and I don't think there'd be too many people that would disagree with me on that. And we need more of them. As people retire, there need to be replacements. There's always going to be. I think if you go into trades and you put your best foot forward and you really. And I'm not talking about being overzealous about this. I'm just talking about just do your job, work, give a good day's work for a good day's pay.
Right.
You'll always have a job in the trades.
Right. Show up on time and sober. That's a good start.
That's
right there.
That's a good start.
Right. And then do what you're told.
Yeah.
And if you're an apprentice, for God's sakes, whatever you do, don't think. That's what they used to tell me. Just do what you're saying. Do what you're told. When you're done, come back and get more directions. But anyway, you know, it's funny. I'm glad you brought that up about the shop class in high school, because I literally lived through that and watched them take the wood shop class out of my school down in Homer, Alaska, and put in a computer lab. And that was fine, and you're right. We've got about 20, 25 years as a society kind of investing in our youth and that type of training, and it's been fine, worked out well for many folks. But we do have to re-emphasize vocational training, and I think that there is a slow shift back towards that, which is good. At the same time, there's always the opportunity for folks to seek out, you know, their own training through the apprenticeship programs. And that's something I wanted to chat with you about, because one of the things that I think is most impressive about your company is that you do offer an apprenticeship program to people looking to learn the trade. And that takes a lot of work in and of itself. I wanted to see if you'd like to speak about that just a little bit, what you've done and why, maybe, and how it's helped your company, or what your thoughts are on the apprenticeship that you're a part of.
Well, yeah, I, you know, I really am very grateful for the fact that right out of high school, I could get into an apprenticeship program, and it educated me. It brought me to where, as far as I'm learned, where I am right here today. It was a big help with that, and I think it's important. Anything we do in life, that we always give back. And mm-hmm. that's one area that I totally enjoy seeing young people coming in, or people in general come in, that have a real desire to learn and be successful at that. And we'll do everything, you know, as in our company, as far as I'm involved in it, to help people be successful anyway. And so. So that part of apprenticeship will always be near and dear to me. We have, at Klebs, we have three apprenticeships available. We have the plumbing apprenticeship, a sheet metal apprenticeship, and HVAC apprenticeship.
Wow.
And, you know, the plumbing apprenticeship primarily takes care of domestic water, hot and cold water, and sewer and waste. And
gotcha.
And the sheet metal primarily deals with learning how to fabricate and hang duct and fittings and forced air ventilation and heating primarily. And then the HVAC part of it really teaches you more about how to install furnaces and boilers, along with you know, humidifiers, controls, venting, and that type of thing. Some of the primary differences between the two actually is that, you know, in commercial plumbing and commercial sheet metal, you usually are working off a set of plans that's done by a professional engineer.
Right.
Sizes are done for you, you know, routes are taken in consideration, and yeah, we have a lot of coordination to do with those, but things are pretty well engineered and laid out for you. Whereas the HVAC end of it, you go into a house or a small building like that, and you're designing that system yourself. You're going.
Right.
You have to understand air flows. You have to understand water flows. You know, and so it's actually is a very interesting field that is sort of overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And so
interesting.
Along with that, also the HVAC is where we get our service technicians out of too. So they can go in and like I said, they get understanding controls and the sequence of how things are going to operate, and off that they can service the equipment that way. So,
how long are each of these apprenticeship programs?
They're all in our apprenticeship program. The one that we are a merit shop, and in our programs they're 4 years, and it's primarily on the job training. Every apprentice is required. They say that it's about 144 hours a year of their own study time,
mm-hmm.
And then we support them in that study time any way we can, if they have questions or whatever. We're their mentors and their teachers, I guess you might say.
Sure.
And then they have a certain number of tests. I think it's like one test a month or something like that they have to take, and they pass the test and they go on to the next chapter. If they don't pass it, they study and then take it over again. Apprenticeships are set up, as far as pay-wise, are set up. You normally start out at 50% of what the journeyman make, what a mm-hmm. journeyman plumber, HVAC, or sheet metal would make in our case. And then every 6 months, you get a raise. And that's dependent, on, of course, on you passing your test. You have to be
sure.
You have to pass those tests. So,
well, this I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, how would someone go about signing up for an apprenticeship at Klebs? Do you have openers at certain times a year, or is it on an as-needed basis, or how do you do that?
Well, you can come talk to us anytime you want to, or come and you know, and that's with any contractor out there. You can go and talk to them individually. In our case, you know, you can go down to Associated Builders and Contractors, and they actually are administrating our program for us now. We used to do it ourselves in-house. We used to have it, but it's as can be imagined, anytime, you know, apprenticeship program is a agreement between the individual mm-hmm. and the company, and then we used to call it the Bureau of Apprenticeship and Training, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it may have changed their name now a little bit, but that's what I remember.
Right.
And you know, that was a three-way agreement and a contractually wise agreement. And with ABC in there now, it's actually a four-way agreement as they're added into that mix, and because they do administer.
That makes
sense.
And
they actually proctor the tests or take the tests down there, and so that takes a lot of load off the contractor, and it stays. It's a very professional program. The unions have a good program in that also. You know, there's opportunities there, and you know, I'm not sure how often they open their doors up to apprentices. I don't know if it's any time of the year, if it's certain times of the year or not. But
I'm not sure how the plumbers union does it. I'm sure anybody could just same thing, call them and ask, mm-hmm. and they'd yep. figure that out. I'm curious, is there a standardized curriculum then that is around the country for this type of plumbing, sheet metal, and HVAC, or do you kind of set the curriculum for your company?
No, there's a standard set. It's pattern standards are pretty much, and they're all approved by the federal government. You know, they're
gotcha.
Ones that you know, you could possibly, I believe a contractor could possibly come up with a zone and negotiate that with there, but you know, it's like recreating the wheel, you know,
sure.
It's already done. It's got a good set. Once in a while, they poke at it a little bit and improve it, and
right.
And it's done a good job for us in the past, anyway. So,
which is one reason why an employer would be benefited by either going through the ABC or a union, because they've already created that wheel,
right,
and got that curriculum in place.
Yeah,
that
right.
makes sense. You know, I was going to ask you, too. I was kind of curious, having done this type of work for a few decades, and particularly in Alaska, has the industry changed much in, you know, the actual hands-on type of skills or tools needed for the work, or is it still pretty much the same as it always was? I'm a painter and drywall finisher by trade. That hasn't changed much. The skills required, you know, the products might change a little here and there, but not much. And
well,
so,
you
just
know,
curious.
Yeah, Bronson, you know, probably if you compared to what it was back in the 70s mm-hmm. with Your I guess what I'm saying is your window isn't big enough, you know.
Well, thank you. There's still time for them to invent a new paint roller, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about even screw guns, for instance. I mean,
right.
You know,
oh, that's true.
To be,
yeah.
That used to change a lot, you know, and
yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, in the 70s, I mean, when I first started, there wasn't self-tapping screws back then.
Right.
We had pop rivets. And when I went through my apprenticeship program, they still taught us how to actually buck rivets. You know, where you drilled a hole and put a rivet through and used a hammer and flatten it out. You know.
Wow.
So you know, there's been a lot of change. It just in fasteners alone, concrete anchors, things like that over the time. I mean, it's just you know, without going into it in detail. I mean, the quickness of things, the way they are now. You know. It has really changed. Man lifts, you know, we never had man lifts years ago. And then the first man lifts that we got, I remember you had to push them around by hand. You couldn't, you drive them, you pushed them and then you got on, then you went up, you know.
Wow.
So there's a lot of changes in their industry technology-wise, as, you know, nowadays with some of these jobs that you have, anyway, if they're large enough, you can get a layout of just every hanger that you're going to be putting in that, and it'll show you a dot on the underside of the floor where you're supposed to put a hanger. It all does that automatically. You know, lays the whole thing out for you versus going out and measuring that and marking and measuring and marking. I mean,
oh yeah,
that's all technology that's come about. You know, and I'm sure you'll have other podcasts about heavy equipment operators and things, how they're all controlled.
Sure.
By technology, there's no individual input hardly into it anymore. And,
yeah, that's true.
And so there's been a lot of changes. You know, we used to have to turn screws in by hand with a screwdriver. You know,
right.
Our wrists were big and fat back then.
No, that's true. There's definitely some good advancements in the type of equipment and tools available, probably across trades. Well, I appreciate your time and coming in this morning. Is there anything that you'd like to add before we wrap up? Anything about the industry or your experience here, maybe the future? It's kind of a open forum. Really appreciate you, the insight that you have available to offer.
Well, I sincerely hope that any young people out there listening, and parents and also on that, can open them up a little bit to what a great career field that the construction trades can bring on, and I hope they can maybe find out, do a little research on that, to some of the things, and because a lot of us, a lot of your kids out there, a lot of your children, a lot of your young adults really, really enjoy working with their hands, and mm-hmm. there's so much satisfaction. It doesn't matter, you know, what part of the trade you're at, just to be a part of that building on that is just, it's always exciting, and you're always going from one interesting job to another interesting job, and
right.
And whether it's residential or commercial or industrial or whatever, it's a great way to make a living anyway, so.
Well, that's great, and I think that you're right. I, too, am eternally optimistic. I think there's a great opportunity for folks, younger folks particularly, looking to get into the trades. Inevitably, our Alaska economy will turn around, and we're going to need more qualified workers. Besides the fact that a lot of guys are leaving right now because they have to, there's a pretty big generation gap in construction. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of folks that are looking to retire in the next few years, and we as a country and as a state are going to need more people to step up and fill those positions in the future. I would encourage anybody in listening that's interested or knows somebody that might be interested in getting into the trades to seriously consider it. I always referred to the apprenticeship program I was as part of as the other four-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do the college if it works for you, but sometimes it's not in the cards. Maybe you know that because of your upbringing or environment, or maybe you're just not interested.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to let people know that they have another option besides just college or just McDonald's.
Right.
You know, and it's great to talk to folks like yourself who've made a personal investment of time and money in your business to create these apprenticeship programs. Folks can find them through unions or through private employers or different options. There's a lot of options out there for you. And the key is that you want to be able to weigh those options in with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that you consider all of the things available for your future. So having folks like you willing to share your experience, come in here and talk about what you've done in the past and what you're seeing in the future is really great. I appreciate your time and everything this morning, and I'm sure we'll cross paths again.
All right. Well, thank you, Bronson.
Yeah.
Appreciate
thanks, Gary.
It.
Yeah, have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.